We're in chapter 7. We're continuing what kind of has been going on for the past two chapters. In chapter 5, Solomon tells his son all about these perils of adultery, tells him to stay away from adultery, to be satisfied with your own wife, speaking to his son, of course. Chapter 6 kind of deals with a few other issues before the latter half of the chapter, which again deals with adultery and the consequences of that, the warning not to get involved with that because it will destroy your life. And then we enter into chapter 7, where it's almost a continuation, even though this is a new thought and a, really for the most part, a story that Solomon is telling. In the first five verses, well, this serves as Solomon's typical bread and butter, the typical introduction to what he's about to write to his son. So Proverbs chapter 7, the first five verses read, "My son, keep my words, treasure my commands within you. Keep my commands." Through all situations of life. Speaking of situations, what is the reason Solomon tells him to do this? What's the subject of our study? Go ahead, Clint. Understandable for sure, but yeah. Right. For sure. Well, to that point, wisdom and understanding is going to keep you from immorality. And in this situation, Solomon is writing to his son once again about the immoral woman, the flattering seductress. As he had, as we talked earlier, he also talked about this in a portion of chapter 2. We've talked about it pretty much all of chapter 5 and the latter half of chapter 6, and now it's going to be the subject of all of chapter 7. This will deal with the subject of adultery for the rest of the chapter. Solomon relays a story to his son about one being caught up in adultery. And from the sound of it, Solomon actually sounds like an eyewitness to this. So the rest of this chapter follows this short story, which I will call four main parts: the setting, the enticement, the fall, and the advice. 6 through 9 covers the setting. 10 through 20 covers the enticement. 21 through 23 covers the fall. And 24 through 27 covers the advice. And we'll go ahead and talk about those per section. But remember that these are all one story, all one congruent picture that Solomon is setting here. So we begin with verses 6 through 9 of this chapter, which covers the setting of the story as Solomon recounts these events. Verses 6 through 9 read, "For at the window of my house I looked through my lattice, and saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner. And he took the path to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night." So the first noteworthy piece of this setting is that Solomon presents this in such a way that suggests, if not blatantly says, he's seen these events with his own eyes. "At the window of my house, I looked through my lattice and saw among the simple and perceived among the youth a young man devoid of understanding." So when it comes to storytelling, I can tell you about real events that happened from the news. Real events that happened from YouTube, videos, podcasts, found footage. But the stories that seem to have great impact are the ones that you've seen yourself or have even been a part of yourself, watching these events unfold before your very eyes. Solomon is saying, this is real. This is something that actually happened. I've seen it with my own eyes, Solomon is saying. This is no old wives' tale. This is no story. This is not a book I'm writing. I got to witness this. This is a terrible thing that has happened in real life. I got to see it. So the second noteworthy thing about the setting is how Solomon is able to perceive the nature of the man involved. Again, he says, he saw among the simple, perceived among the youth. And what stood out to him? Verse 7, a young man devoid of understanding. So being as wise as he is, he likely was able to discern how wise or how foolish others were simply by their actions, by their attitudes, by their mannerisms. And so, looking out, he can see. He can plainly see. Okay, there's the simple. I see the simple. I see the youth. And there's one guy standing out to me right now because I know what he's doing. I know where he's going. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. There's another noteworthy piece about this setting, the time of day. It is happening at night. "And saw among the simple, I perceived among the youth." Is our fire detector going out? Just kidding. "I perceived among the youths a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner, and he took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night." Solomon is, in his wisdom, was able to observe patterns, able to observe the nature of both the woman and man involved. And the events that follow are happening in the dark hours of the night. The dark hours of the night are when all bad things go down. It's when all the shady characters come out to play. It's when all the people who live normal lives in the day get to hide away, let their demons out, engage in sin and debauchery. They don't call it moonlighting for nothing. And so there's the setting. Among the youth, among the simple, there's one man that stood out to me in the dark of the night. And what happens next? We've seen the setting. Now, verses 10 through 20, we see the enticement of the harlot and her in the act of seducing this young and naive man. So verses 10 through 20, we'll go ahead and read all that. "There was, and there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square. lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows, so I came out to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloe, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day. And so we get really into the big part of the story here as he describes the woman that comes out to meet this young man. Verses 10 through 12, once again, there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. Have you ever seen online these street interviews that people do? Those that may don't know about that. I've seen a few of these where it's just people out in the street with a microphone, and they just talk to people. They just ask people, random questions, and you know, people just happen to walk by, and they pull them in, ask them questions. Within this realm of content, though, there are a lot of times where the interviewees, the people being interviewed, women dressed immodestly, being loud, being obnoxious, maybe out partying, maybe out looking to hook up, as they say. In some cases, these women are with a guy, and the interviewer will do one thing where he wants them to swap phones. And the guy is willing. The guy wants to. The girl's like, oh, I don't want to reveal the phone. That usually means something shady is going on that phone of hers, but I digress. Other cases, the women will flirt with the interviewer or some other guys while there's a guy with her. Or she had just said in this question segment that she has a guy at home. Sounds a lot like what we read here in Proverbs. Someone who is out and about, someone who is looking to hook up with someone else, looking to seduce men with her body, with her speech. And a man like Solomon, that Solomon just described, young and naive, he is the most susceptible to the advances of the harlot here in this passage. Granted, while anyone, man or woman, young or old, are susceptible to give in to harlotry and adultery. On either side of it, it is scary to see how many young people are involved in this and are not realizing how much of their lives they're going to be messing up by being involved in this. This is going to be something that follows them for a long time, if not all their lives. So getting back to Solomon's story, we see verses 13 through 15. So she caught him and kissed him with an impudent face. She said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. Talk about being forward. What does it mean to have an impudent face? Go ahead, Ellen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Some people definitely know what they're doing, but this young and naive guy, you know, maybe he's thinking he's about to have the time of his life. Maybe he's thinking nobody's going to know. But guess what? Solomon's seeing it. And we'll see a few other things here in a minute. But first, what does it mean to have an impudent face? Bold? Shameless. The original word is actually a verb that means to be strong, to make firm, to strengthen, to harden. You may have a version that you read that says brazen or bold, and that is exactly what is happening here. She is strengthening her face. She is focused on her victim, I'll just say. She is resolved to follow through with this evil. Clint, did you have something? For sure. People are going to make excuses. People are going to defend these actions. But that's why we have the words of Solomon here, to tell us otherwise. And so we see she's resolved. We see she is bold. We see that she is shamelessly pursuing this. And later in these verses, it says that she came out diligently to diligently seek his face. I came to meet you diligently to seek your face. This is someone. My grammar is just terrible. This is someone she has led on and now has him right where she wants him and is making her intentions known to him, to his face. She says she has peace offerings. She has paid her vows. Essentially, she has done what the law required of her. What the law required her to do in the daytime. And now it's nighttime. What does that mean? It's naughty time. And so verses 16 through 18. I've spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. She's prepared. She's prepared her home for this. She pulled out all the stops in order to entice this man, in order to create a scenario back at home, which is inviting. Pulling out all the stops to entice this man, bring him into her home, and do whatever they want. The bed sheets are fresh, high quality, beautiful, colorful, smell nice. All the makings of a special intimate evening. She invites him with words of flattery. Does that sound familiar? Like anything we've read in previous chapters? These seductive words, these words of temptation, so that she could have a night of bedroom fun with this guy. And also, words that are lies. Think about her saying love in this. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. Is this love? Is this true love? I know society has come to calling sex making love. This is not true love, brother. There's nothing about this that is true love. This is lust. This is fleshly desire. This is not love driven. The person who gets involved in this may think it's love, may give themselves over to the illusion that it is love, that it is going to be fulfilling, that it is something that they want to go through with. But to call this love is a disgrace. As a matter of fact, as we see here in the next few verses, the biggest problem of all, she be cheating. She has a husband. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning, verse 18. Let us delight ourselves with love. Verse 19, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He's taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day. Well, yeah, I see it. She shouldn't even be talking that way since she has a husband. None of this conversation should have happened at all on her part. She should not be here at all. She's got a husband. Yes, he's away for some time. Deal with it. He's coming back. But again, just as Solomon said before, she can't stay home. She needs to get out. She needs to look for something to fulfill her. She got bored, so she goes out. Solomon says she's loud, rebellious, would not stay at home. What does she do? She gets out on the streets, finds a mildly attractive, kind of dumb young guy, and says all these seductive words to him. That boy must have felt like he was on cloud nine. That this random woman comes out of nowhere, kisses him, tells him about her bed being made at home, says, let's make love all night long. My husband isn't home. He's probably thinking, that's his loss, isn't it? This is screwed up, y'all. Her husband, as we can tell from this, I believe, he appears to be a hardworking man. He's away, haven't taken money with him. He's likely away on business. He's likely going to be away for a good amount of time. And so she's out sleeping around on him. And our young man in the story here either doesn't know how to properly answer her or doesn't care how to properly answer her. Go ahead. Oh, yeah. Went toward the danger instead of away from it. So, as Celeste said, this guy knew what he was doing. Knew the way that led by her house. Knew that this was a person that was going to fulfill him. And through her words, he thought that he could fulfill her too, Clint. Making a choice and you're dishonoring God. That's true. Beg your pardon? Oh, yeah. For sure. And like we said, in the case of this young man, he knew the way there. He knew what house to go to, what apartment number, whatever you want to call it. That's the house of that girl. That girl that said, she likes me. The girl that said, I'm handsome. The girl that said, come on over. part do they forget about the most? Well, sometimes even more than dishonoring God, because people out in the world, they don't care about honoring God. And they're going to drag us individually in the same way. Miss Ellen. This is a bad, bad situation. A bad, bad situation involving a bad, bad woman. To Celeste's point from earlier, I did have this on my notes here, but I didn't say it for whatever reason. Kind of reminds me of back in Proverbs chapter 6, verse 32. This goes back to pointing out the nature of this young man. Man young and devoid of understanding. Previous chapter, Proverbs 6, verse 32, Solomon says, "Whoever commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. He who does so destroys his own soul." And so we take this same thought that we read back there, carry it into over here, and again, understanding is the fact of the matter that there's probably red flags going off in his head that he's completely ignoring in order to do this. He probably does know better. And so he's got to ignore all sense of his better judgment. And he does not have the understanding that you're about to screw up the life of everybody involved in this situation. You don't care about that. You're ignoring that in your own mind in order to pursue this sin. Yes, Andre, go ahead. Sometimes subtlety can be enough. Sometimes a smile, sometimes a look, sometimes a way of phrasing words. That can have an effect. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you can pass it off as casual, as something that's not that big a deal. But then again, innocent. But then again, over time, that's when it starts to, yeah, that's what it leads to. It very much can and very much will. Let's see. Get out of the situation. We're going to talk a lot about that when we get to our questions later on. But yes, I'm glad you brought up Joseph, because that is the example to me in how to deal with a situation where there's adultery involved. Run. With the capital R-U-N. Run. Get out of there. Don't stick around for it. As Mr. Miyagi would say, no be there. So anyway, but he went there. He went for it. He found it. Who cares about consequences? I've never felt more wanted, is probably what he's thinking. And that's how they get you. Again, that subtlety, that casual, innocent, no big deal stuff. And in this case, the big stuff, the I'm going to grab you and kiss you and say, let's go into the bed. Proverbs chapter 7, verse 21 through 23 now comes to the fall of the man. He says, Solomon says, within her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately, he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare. He did not know it would cost him his life. Again, the enticing speech was meant to arouse the man, and it succeeded. That type of speech was to make him feel wanted, to make him feel loved, to make him feel special. And so this caused the downfall of the man. Her enticing speech, her flattery, they seduced him. And again, any logic, any red flags that went off, anything telling him that this is not a good idea is either entirely absent or completely ignored because he didn't care to act upon understanding. So what happened to him because of this? It cost him his life. He went after her. He pursued her. Probably went all the way with her. Solomon compares him to an ox going to the slaughter, a fool to the shackles, an arrow striking his liver, a bird hastening to the snare. And what's the analogy here? As Miss Ellen said, cost him his life. He got entrapped by the harlot, caught in her net, in her web of seductive lies and flattery. Now she has him right where she wants him, and probably where he wants him, and will take advantage of him, use him up, destroy his very life. Remember what we read in the previous chapter, Proverbs chapter 6, verse 26. For by means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread, and an adulteress will prey upon his precious life. Whoever this man was, he was brought to the lowest of lows by the pursuit of harlotry. Harlotry ruins the lives of everyone involved. Doesn't matter who you are, how old you are, whether you're a man or a woman, harlotry, adultery, immorality, all these intertwined, they ruin the lives and destroy souls. Might be able to go through the whole chapter this night. We got 3 minutes. Let's see if we can do it. Last few verses, we see the advice Solomon offers on the matter. He says, verse 24, beginning, now therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. So Solomon offers this advice. And why? Verse 25, he says, do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. Solomon ultimately says, completely avoid this person. Completely stay away from the harlot. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Seduction, flattery, is more for the heart than the mind. The mind is logic. The mind questions. The mind refutes these words. The heart is emotion. The heart feels the words rather than questions them. The heart is enthralled by the words rather than questioning them and comes into longing for more. The heart is deceptive. If the heart is not right, then it can twist the mind to stop listening to reason and listen only to passion. An uncontrolled heart or an evil heart mixed with a mind of weak resolve and lack of reasoning will lead to situations like we just read. Do not stray into her paths. If we know there are places that can lead to situations like this, we need to make sure we steer clear of those places. Don't go by the house of the adulterer. Don't go where they work. Don't go where they like to hang out. Stay away from them at all costs. Adultery, lust, immorality, porn, these are not temptations you fight. These are temptations you run away from, just like we talked about with Joseph a second ago. Get away from the adulterous person. Get out of sketchy situations. Turn off the computer, go outside. Whatever you got to do. Joseph had the right idea. He told his master's wife to take a hike, but she still came on to him, so he had to get out of there. And why does Solomon give this advice? Verse 26 and 27. She has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. So Solomon offers this advice here. Or shows us what the end result is if you don't follow the advice, I should say. It doesn't matter how strong you think you are. Again, sexual temptations are not temptations you fight. Those are temptations you run away from. Get out. The sin is in your realm of possibilities in your life. Then stay away from anyone and any place where you can be pushed to the limit, where you can be pushed to the limit and break and sin. Solomon says her house leads to death, echoing what he said in chapter 2, verses 18 and 19, as well as chapter 5 and verse 5. This will mess up your whole life. So Solomon conveys his story. Stay away from adultery. Stay away from harlotry. Protect yourself and your heart and your soul from pursuing those that are trying to seduce you and make you stray from paths of righteousness. And I'm afraid I'm a minute over. I got it all in, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to save questions, any comments or any other thoughts until next time. So just hold on to it. Lord willing, we'll be back here next week. Thank you all again for your comments, for being here this evening. Next week's New Year's Eve, isn't it? We've got all these Eve Wednesdays going on. All righty.